Victory or death!
Victory or death! Victory or death!
Victory or death!
Victory or death!
Victory or death!
Victory or death!
Victory or death!
Victory or death!
Victory or death!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Radio Free Virginia. I'm your host, Hank Reardon. The voice of freedom behind enemy lines here in the Commonwealth of Virginia, equipping patriots like you with the tools they need in the fight to preserve your liberty. And we are in a fight. This is episode 21-14, the 14th episode of 2021. Talk about a couple different things. As you can see, there was no episode last Saturday. My goal right now is to actually do one today and tomorrow. I had a nice, relaxing vacation with the family down in South Carolina. Went down there, stayed at Isle of Palms, beautiful place. Shot of the beach, got up a couple times, watched the sunrise. Just had a great time to relax. Didn't do any work. Specifically, intentionally didn't do it. I did bring my microphone just in case I got the thinking to do it and just decided, no, I'm not going to do it. Everyone's got to take a break once in a while, and I highly recommend you do that for yourself. I'm going to talk about a couple different things, share a couple different articles with you today. I'm not going to be reading a chapter of I Led Three Lives. My plan is to do that tomorrow. So I'm going to be sharing an article from Town Hall by Dennis Prager about the whole mask compliance thing. And something from a guy named Matt Bracken. And then, of course, the gun grabbers are at it again. But one of the big things I want to do at the end of this podcast is share with you some of my favorite podcasts, some of the things I listen to on a regular basis that I think that you will like, that will pertain to you, and that you might find enjoyable. Doesn't mean you can stop listening to this one, but I wanted to get you some good stuff because, well, I'll explain why when I get to that section of the show. Today's episode is brought to you by ActiCare of the Blue Ridge, ACTIKARE.com/blue-ridge. If you're looking for in-home senior care for your loved one when you can't be there, get in touch with John and his staff and they will take good care of you. If you're in Smith Mountain Lake, Roanoke, Bedford, Campbell, Lynchburg, out in the country, get in touch with them today, ACTIKARE.com/blue-ridge. And John and his staff will take good care of you. I was just out with John today, flying our remote control airplanes, having a good time. Man, that's a fun hobby. Fun and frustrating at times, but fun. Well, let's get started here. This is from Town Hall, Dennis Prager. Some of you know he has a radio show. And the title of the article is Mask Wearing Represents Fear and Blind Obedience, Not Science. I have a story to share when I'm done with this about a mask Nazi that we encountered down south. When I see people walking outside, often alone with no one anywhere near them, wearing a mask, my primary reactions are disappointment and sadness. I'm disappointed because I expected better from my fellow Americans. I never thought most Americans would be governed by irrational fears and unquestioning obedience to authority. I've come to realize I had a somewhat romanticized view of my countrymen. Had you told me a year ago that nearly every American in nearly every metropolitan area would cover their faces for over a year because one man, one political party, and the media told them to, I would have responded that you underestimate the strength of the American character. But here we are, over a year later, and where I live, the Los Angeles area, I am usually the only person on the street not wearing a mask. For the record, I wear a mask in stores when entering the building in which I work out of courtesy to those who think that a person not wearing a mask poses a lethal threat. On the rare occasions I pass people not wearing a mask, I thank and praise them. They are invariably enthused by my reaction. You do not need medical or scientific expertise to understand the foolishness of our outdoor mask wearing. Common sense, that great unused guide to life suffices. If you wear a mask, you do so in the belief that you are protecting yourself and others from COVID-19. So then, why do you care if I don't wear a mask? Doesn't your mask protect you? If it does, my not wearing a mask may irritate you because you resent my assertion of freedom, my obvious lack of respect for government and medical authorities, and my alleged selfishness. But there would be no rational medical, that is, science-based reason for your objecting to my not wearing a mask. And if masks protect us and others, why have people been refused the right to visit loved ones as he or she lay dying alone? Why couldn't a person wearing the same mask a doctor or nurse or healthcare worker wears when entering your patient's room enter that room? There are two possibilities. One is that it is a tacit admission that masks are essentially useless. You were prevented from visiting your dying father because the hospital believes your loved ones or others in the hospital might contract the virus from you, even though you were wearing a mask, which means those running the hospital don't believe masks actually work. The other is that the medical establishment and lay authorities have abandoned elementary human decency in the name of AOC or abundance of caution, forcing hundreds of thousands of people to die alone will go down as one of the cruelest policies ever adopted by American medical and political authorities. The problem is, most Americans who went to college learned to unquestioningly obey experts. This is why common sense, logic, and reason mean little to the well-educated, and increasingly to everyone else, because everyone is taught by the well-educated. All we need to know is what the experts say. That, plus a fanatical adherence to the rules of abundance of caution, have crushed logic and reason. The irony, however, is that the science doesn't justify the fanatical commitment to mask wearing. There are plenty of experts with evidence-based views to the contrary. Here are but a few examples. Before I continue, if you go back a couple podcasts, I shared some really interesting articles that actually talk about science, and then in the article use that very science that says the opposite of what they're saying to say what they're saying. Quite remarkable. Propaganda is an amazing thing. I continue. Dr. Anthony Fauci himself told the truth about the uselessness of mask wearing on 60 Minutes on March 8th, 2020. Right now, in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little better. It might even block a droplet, but it's not providing the perfect protection that people think it is. And often, there are unintended consequences. People keep fiddling with the mask and keep touching their face. Duh. Dr. Raman Oskui, a cardiologist in Washington, at a Senate hearing in December 2020, testified under oath, masks do not work. The Wall Street Journal reported on November 11th, the projected number of lives saved and implied case for the mask mandate are based on faulty statistics. Dr. Paul Alexander, a Canadian epidemiologist, wrote, surgical and cloth masks used as they currently are have absolutely no impact on controlling the transmission of COVID-19 virus, and current evidence implies that face masks can actually be harmful. That's from February 11th, 2021. Roger W. Coops, who has a doctorate in chemistry from the University of California, Riverside, wrote, a mask, and that term usually refers to either a surgical mask or an N95 mask, has no benefit in the general population and is only used in controlled clinical settings. Further, it has been considered a greater transmission risk than a benefit in the general population. In the open environment, no one should be wearing face coverings. Finally, a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine on May 21, 2020 concluded, we know that wearing a mask outside healthcare facilities offers little, if any, protection from infection. Public health authorities define a significant exposure to COVID-19 as face-to-face contact within 6 feet with a patient with symptomatic COVID-19, that is sustained for at least a few minutes, and some say more than 10 minutes or even 30 minutes. The chance of catching COVID-19 from a passing interaction in a public space is therefore minimal. In many cases, the desire for widespread masking is a reflexive reaction to anxiety over the pandemic. Contrary to mainstream media misinformation, the doctors who wrote that report did not later retract anything they wrote. People say they follow the science. They rarely do. They follow the scientists the media tell them to follow. Good job, Dennis Prager. And you're all seeing it. You see it everywhere you go. I hope at least once in a while you're rebelling from the norm and not wearing one. I know many of you aren't. I was in Home Depot today returning something, and I only saw one other person, and the place was jam-packed, not wearing a mask. Shocking. Dumb, blind obedience based on nothing. So down in South Carolina, at the resort community we were staying at, they have mask signs everywhere. And right out by the elevator where the button is, it says, mask required inside elevator. Well, we're coming back from the beach. Just got out of the car. We're coming back from somewhere. And there's five of us. And walk up to the elevator. Guy's standing there getting his mail. He lives in the place. It's like a condo thing, you know. And says, you know, mask are required. He's a Chad. Chad is a male Karen. Mask are required. You have to wear a mask inside the elevator. We press the button and say, we're not wearing a mask. Just get on the elevator. But that's very selfish, he says to us. And then proceeds to get on the elevator with five people not wearing a mask. Why? So that he can find out where we're staying. Nothing came of it. I really wish it had. I was looking forward to that confrontation. But nothing came of it. He probably told them and they said, we'll look right into that, sir, and did nothing. One benefit to people not giving a rip about their jobs anymore is the fact that nothing comes of lots of things now. Hey, this thing is broken. Oh, we'll look right into that. Hey, there's people breaking the law over here. Yeah, we'll look right into that. Nobody does their job anymore. For various reasons I'm not going to get into right now. But another blind, dumb, obedient bootlicker causing problems. Many of those around. All right, this is written by Matt Bracken, and it's posted over at American Partisan. And the title is Armed Citizens Must Defend Their Communities from Rioting Mobs If the Politicized Police Will Not. In societies living under the rule of law, sworn law enforcement officers have always been considered fully justified in applying lethal force against violent mobs during arson riots, such as those which have been occurring with regularity in American cities during the terrible summer of 2020. This was the intent and meaning of police officials publicly reading the Riot Act, announcing over a loudspeaker that a violent mob had been declared to be an unlawful assembly. That is to say, a riot. Rioters who lingered on the street after that final warning could be engaged by law enforcement at any level up to and including the use of deadly force with no further announcement. This was, in prior, more civilized times, a basic understanding of all citizens living under the rule of law. This is why police officers' standard-issue pump shotgun was traditionally referred to as a riot gun, long before the development of modern, less lethal munitions. This is also why arson riots were uncommon and short-lived. Everyone understood the ground rules. There was no right to burn, loot, or murder. Thomas Sowell put it this way, if you were not prepared to use force to defend civilization, then be prepared to accept barbarism. Note that he did not say government or police department. He said you, if you were not prepared. ABR, my own acronym for the current working coalition of Antifa, BLM, and Revolutionary Communist Party of the USA, are now routinely using Molotov cocktails and other incendiary explosive devices as offensive weapons in both an anti-personnel and anti-property arson role. As far as the BATFE is concerned, a Molotov cocktail is an illegal explosive device, and so are powerful high-altitude fireworks when they are deployed at ground level as anti-personnel and anti-property explosive incendiary grenades. Unless your Bumbles is BATF, this was written during the Trump administration days, I'm not so sure that that rule would apply unless you or I were the ones using those devices. Furthermore, at this writing in September 2020, there is no moral or ethical requirement for law-abiding American citizens to wait for a lit Molotov cocktail or any other incendiary or explosive device to crash through the window of their home or business. While ABR mobs are rampaging through the streets conducting arson attacks, once the fire begins, morally and ethically, the same rules for the use of force should apply that would attach to a lynch mob or Ku Klux Klan night riders on their way to burn homes or businesses. Both KKK night riders bearing torches in the olden times and violent mobs of ABR terrorists with Molotov cocktails or other incendiary devices today can and should be engaged by armed citizens with any necessary level of force required to halt their terroristic depredations. In numerous recent cases, law enforcement under leftist political control has repeatedly abdicated its traditional and expected role in breaking up violent riots and preventing arson and other terror attacks. Week by week, the level of ABR violence has been steadily escalating, and it's logical to assume that it will only worsen as the hotly contested presidential election draws near. Well, it did. Died down shortly before, so they could, they got their marching orders. They said, well, now we gotta try and get this bumbling oaf in there. You can break things again once he's done, once he's in. And they're waiting. I'll get to that in a second. So let me be very clear. If Democratic Party governors, mayors, and DAs have hamstrung their police for political reasons and will not allow them to protect the lives and property of their local citizens using all required force, abandoning their primary mission in order to bow to these ABR mobs, then it's time for the undefended citizens to apply the clear intent of the Second Amendment. There should be deep regret about the abandonment of the rule of law by the Democratic Party, political ruling class, but there should be no more quibbles or hesitation by American citizens concerning the legitimacy of armed community self-defense in the absence of expected law enforcement protection. Therefore, it is my carefully considered opinion that black-clad and masked ABR mobs rampaging and terrorizing innocent citizens on their under the cover of darkness in the style of the KKK of old may morally and ethically be taken under preemptive fire by armed citizens at any level to drive them out of their peaceful neighborhoods and away from their businesses before the terrorists can reach their targets and throw their Molotov cocktails and other explosives and incendiary devices. As a historic note, it should be understood that the National Rifle Association was founded after the last American Civil War by former Union Army officers and Republicans at that, in order to empower freed African-American former slaves to defend themselves with firearms against KKK night raids. In the 19th century, the Democratic Party then allied with the Klan, as the Democrats of today are aligned with Antifa and BLM, had favored strict gun control in the form of narrowly written laws restricting legal ownership of firearms by free black citizens. The more things change, the more they stay the same. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So we've seen this. We've seen everything he's talking about, except for us actually standing up and fighting back. Now, there is one example I saw on video. I don't know where it went. Haven't seen it since. But this group of what looked like BLM people rolled into the neighborhood in their cars. They got out. They went to the urban, they went from the urban to the rural. And this guy walks out on his porch with his AR, lights on and everything, and starts lighting them up. Shooting at them. Don't know what happened to him. Don't know if he was charged. I'm not saying what he did was wrong. I mean, I think the method of which he did it was wrong. If you're going to do something like that, you don't turn on your porch light and make it that you're clearly identifiable. But they left. They left town. They got back in their cars and they went away. So, you know, hey, there is a comment on this article which I think is hilarious. This is the typical FUD article, FUD response to an article. We are absolutely morally justified in taking down the arsonists and assassins, but ... We need to rally as much public opinion behind us as we can first. Heard this garbage before, everybody? We need to retake the moral high ground. I have an idea for a way to do that, at least step in the right direction. Tens of millions of Americans are getting fed up to the back teeth with the arson, looting, rioting, and murder that we have been witnessing for the past few months, occurring while some elected faux officials, that's good, sat on their hands or even helped pay the bail for the infrequent cases of arrest. We need to rally as much public opinion behind us as we can. We have talked about this before. We will never, ever, 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 ever get the public opinion behind us. Ever. It's never going to happen. They're not going to get behind your militia. no matter what you call it. They're not going to get behind your Tea Party, no matter what you call it. They're not going to get behind your Republican Party, your Second Amendment group, your civil rights group, whatever it is, no matter what you call it or no matter what you do. There is no moral high ground when fighting communist mobs. None. Long ditches is the only solution to a communist revolution. That's it. No amount of sucking up to them and licking their boots is going to change the way they feel about you. None. Stop apologizing because you were born white or privileged or rich or whatever, or because you worked your butt off and started a business and got successful. Stop apologizing. Stop doing it through your money and donating to Southern Poverty Law Center. Stop doing it through just sucking up and not saying anything when the people are in your face accusing you of wrong. Don't bow down to them. They're evil. Pure and simple, evil. Fight back. Morally justified. Moral high ground. Give me a break. I got an interesting text message from one of my listeners. And he says, given the George Floyd trial going on and the potential for more protests locally, BLM is announced to their members to stand by and get active. I'm interested to hear if you have any updated, different, or same recommendation, lesson learned that you shared on the Siege of Fifth and Federal podcast. Of all your podcasts, that podcast is the one I repeatedly listen to most as it is a reminder that no one is coming to save me, as well as the violent protests small cities like Lynchburg are capable of, as well as lessons learned. I just finished listening to that podcast again for the fifth or sixth time, and I respectfully disagree with some of your less lethal suggestions. Specifically, you mentioned hitting protesters who are throwing rocks with paintballs. I play paintball regularly, and it is my opinion hitting someone with one, few, or a bunch of paintballs will cause a minimal level of pain or discomfort. More pain if shot in the groin or neck. Personally, I do not consider this pain level to be high enough to stop determined attackers. I believe that the discomfort and pain caused by a paintball or other less lethal option, like pepper spray, will cause the attacker to become more enraged and thus retaliate attack in a more forceful manner, instead of the desired outcome of peacefully no longer throwing rocks or attacking. If you still think hitting someone with paintballs or causing discomfort, minimal pain will cause an attacker to stop attacking, I would like to hear your logic. I wonder if increased pain only delays or increases the violence of the likely retaliation. Perhaps some discussion on pepper spray would also be interesting to your listeners. Personally, I consider pepper spray to not be a good tool if you are maintaining a position based on the same discomfort leads to retaliation logic above. I do agree pepper spray may help when retreating, but has the risk of a live fire response or unintentionally killing someone with a pepper allergy. Perhaps a discussion on de-escalation techniques and force escalation ladder would be interesting to hear. And he makes a couple other comments. So on the question of less lethal, ultimately the problem at Fifth and Federal was they were not using lethal force. We could not respond with lethal force. If they had a Molotov cocktail, I could shoot that dude. But because they were just throwing rocks, the court would gladly prosecute us for using lethal force. I agree. I would much rather use lethal force. I think the better option is to use it. If you shoot one guy, that's it. Now, they'll be pissed the next day. They'll show back up and probably burn the place down or burn some other thing down. Or that's where all the others will start getting bust in because you killed what they would say is an unarmed black man. I don't think we're in a place where there's any good solutions. So as far as those people in my experience with them at Fifth and Federal, I do believe still, and I still stand behind it, if we had paintballs, that if we had, or even better, pepper balls, and we had shot a few of those at them, they would have left. Those people were cowards. And as soon as the police showed up, They scattered like cockroaches in the light. Now, let's look at this from a different standpoint. Let's assume that in a future encounter, we had trained leftist revolutionary Antifa types who've been inoculated against pain, which is something that you can do through training, have been inoculated against stress and fear, which is something you can do through training, which they are training. Then it's a different story. Would I do Fifth and Federal again? I don't think so. If I was going to do it again, here's what I would do. That place was destroyed, and nothing was going to stop that. All we did is lessen the amount of destruction. I would be there with drones and with cameras, good high quality 200 plus millimeter zoom lenses up on a rooftop, taking pictures of those dirtbags. Now, what would I do if I was going to actually respond? Because let's say the cops are gone. They're just G-O-N-E gone. Well, then it's time to go in there. Hypothetically, it would be time to go in there with masks and gloves and ammunition that you loaded with gloves and your rifles and take care of business. But that's all hypothetical. But I think that we're getting to a place where we can no longer tolerate this kind of insanity. And despite this, we have to have the high ground nonsense. There is a limit to what we can be expected to tolerate, and consequences are irrelevant. I think that we're making a mistake in America right now by not understanding who the enemy is. That the enemy is evil. The enemy is communists, and that communist would build special prisons with sloped floors so they could shoot you in the head and wash the blood away easier. That's the level of evil that we're facing. They want you dead, and no one is coming to save you. Fifth and Federal is an interesting problem that we faced. And with the upcoming George Floyd, probably acquittal that will happen, or significantly reduced whatever, the fact is that this guy, George Floyd, was so hopped up on fentanyl that he would have been dead regardless. There was nothing at all that anybody could have done that would have saved that man's life. He would have been dead. Had the cop not been sticking his knee on his neck, it would have just been another drug overdose guy. So optics are important. I mean, we've got that. I don't know the solution. But I do know that this better red than dead attitude that many people have, you need to smack them across the face when they say things like that, because you're better off dead than red. Because if we turn red, you're going to be dead anyway. And what about your kids and your wife and your parents? What about your grandkids? Are they better off red than dead? How about enslaved for the next 200 years, 1,000 years? Not okay. Not okay at all. Just say no. Friends don't let friends become communists. One of the other things he sent me is wondering how is the Krav Maga going? So I've been going regularly. I've only missed a couple classes. It's three nights a week. It's a really good cardio workout and at the beginning, and good workout during. Last night we were doing on the ground, basically kicking the pad of who you were teamed up with. And then, you know, when he'd say go, you had to get up. And after you've been on the ground kicking and defending yourself, and this person comes at you with a knife, it's real hard to get up. The best thing that happened was I grabbed the guy, secured the knife, and threw the knife across the room. That was the best I got out of it. I mean, almost every time I wasn't able to get up. So it's challenging. But one of the things I like about it, and this is true of most martial arts, is the aggression training and the aggression inoculation. So when somebody's being aggressive against you, it inoculates you when you're regularly getting in someone's face during this class. And having someone get in your face during this class, then inoculates you against that. I have always been confrontational. I've always avoided confrontation in a physical sense. I knew that I didn't want to fight. Growing up all through middle school, high school, whatever, I thought fighting was stupid. Because what we were typically fighting was you looked at my girl or something dumb. I'm like, look, I don't want to fight. This is stupid. So I've never really done any of that. And I wasn't in the military, so I never had that inoculation to be aggressive. As Jocko Willink would say, be default aggressive. And so it's been great. It's been a real good experience. I've been enjoying it. I will probably sign up for another 6 months. I honestly don't know if I'll sign up after that. So I'll do a full year probably. And the reason is it's a big time commitment. You know, 3 nights a week, I'm burning a lot of hours there, and I got stuff I got to do. So I just don't know. At the rate things are increasing, I'm picking up new clients for web design, and I'm just getting busy. So I don't want to subtract from my family time, and there's just certain things I want to get done. This year's been interesting. There's a lot of shift. I make things with my hands. Haven't been doing that a lot. Been busy doing other things. Something I'll share with you. I wrote down to just keep myself on track. To get where you want to go requires a change in the mode of transport. So if you're always doing the same thing, you're never going to get to where you want to go. If you're always riding a bike and you're never getting where you want to go, time to get in a car and go. So just, keep pushing. So next up we have the gun grabbers, you know, the new ATF chief that that Bumbles has wanted to get appointed is a gun-grabbing Nazi piece of garbage. And so we have that going for us. Currently, Bumbles has directed the ATF to change things with regards to a couple things, about 80%, which good luck with that, and the braces for pistol ARs. And one of the arguments here is why I even bring this up is one of the arguments of the pistol brace ARs and why they're bad is they help you have a more accurate. Well, that's yes and no, that's true. The 10-inch AR, I have one, it's not as accurate as the 16-inch. I would much rather, if I'm going to go in and do something anywhere, whatever that something is, I would much rather have the 16-inch. I mean, I can keep that at my side. People are so oblivious now, you know, they don't pay attention to anything. I could have that thing at my side, walk in and walk through Home Depot. Nobody would even probably know I had it. They just don't pay attention. So what 16 inch, 10 and a half inch, we're looking at 4 inches, five inches. We're looking at 5-inch difference. Whoop-de-doo. The reason I like my 10-inch is because I can have a primary weapon system that I can, when I travel, keep it somewhere hidden in my vehicle that's easy to hide, you know, under the storage area in the back or wherever. I was able to take it with me, not in two parts, to my trip to South Carolina with 3 magazines and my pistol in a case that looks like a instrument case and have personal defense with me the whole time. I have no intention of complying with this nonsense. I'm done. I'm done. I'm not playing anymore. So gun grabbers of the world, unite all you want. I'm not playing your game. I know where this leads. I know what you're going to do. The second you get all these guns, you're going to kill us all. Because that's what you do. That's what evil communists do. Next, I'm going to talk about 3 different podcasts. And the first one is called The Cold War, What We Saw. It's by Bill Whittle. So it's kind of like a documentary style thing, and it's a temporary thing. It's just a series, but it's outstanding. It's got original clips from news stories. It talks about all these different things. Talks about the Berlin airlift, which I heard about, but I didn't really know about. Pretty fascinating. And all kinds of stuff leading up to the Cold War, during the Cold War. This picture of evil that is communism is shocking. They had this prison called the Lubyanka, which really wasn't a prison. It was an execution house. They had sloped floors, and they would bolt doors to the wall, and they would line you up against the wall, and a guard would pull out a revolver and shoot you in the head. And the sloped floors would help them hose down the blood. It's just, wow. I mean, just shocking. But here, take a listen.
When Stalin ordered that land access to Berlin be closed to Allied forces, it was simply the latest and most flagrant example of the unwillingness of the Soviet Union to abide by the terms of the agreements laid down at the Tehran Summit Conference in November of 1943, the Yalta Conference in February of 1945, and especially the Potsdam Conference in late July of 1945, more than 2 months after the war had ended in Germany. Although the big three nations had remained the same, the United States, Great Britain, and the Soviet Union, the cast had changed at Potsdam, where President Harry S. Truman had taken over from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who had died from a massive stroke on April 12, 1945, less than a month before the German surrender. Winston Churchill had been a vocal opponent of the Soviet regime since its inception. Having served both on the trenches and the front lines, as well as being First Lord of the Admiralty, Churchill had been instrumental in British policies for the first half of World War I. When the Bolsheviks came to power and pulled Russia out of the war, both France and Britain suffered grievously as German troops were freed from the Russian front to add pressure to the Western trenches. Indeed, several countries, including Great Britain and the United States, had sent troops to support the ex-Tsarist or White Russian forces against the Communist Red Army forged by Leon Trotsky. The eventual survival of the communist state had been a very, very near thing.
The failure to strangle Bolshevism at its birth and to bring Russia then prostrate by one means or another into the general democratic system lies heavy upon us today.
I love that quote by Churchill there where he's talking about strangling communism in its infancy and how much the world regretted not doing it. Look at the suffering, the death and destruction. The Cold War was anything but cold. It was numerous wars fought during the Cold War. Proxy wars and people on both sides dying and just an awful thing. And so, but the podcast is just great. You're going to love it. And you can find the link in the show notes, radiofreevirginia.com. Check out the show notes and you can download that podcast and enjoy that yourself. The next podcast I want to tell you about is by Nick Freitas, and it's called Making the Argument. And he talks about a bunch of different things, you know, gun rights. He talks about the left and fascism and communism and a bunch of different things. And here's a little clip from that.
Communists like to claim that fascism is a form of capitalism. And in fact, if you read Trotsky, Trotsky liked to talk about essentially communist prophecy. It was this idea that once capitalism, you know, reached those end stages where it was imploding on itself because of, you know, the different classes rising up and the internal contradictions within capitalism, once that took place, there would be this last breath, this last gasp of capitalism. And they started to treat fascism in the late 20s as if that was the last gasp of capitalism. But then let's look at what people like Hitler and Mussolini actually had to say about capitalism. They hated it, right? They were virulently anti-capitalist. And in fact, they both identified more with socialism. Nazi is an acronym for the National Socialist Workers' Party, right? If you look at Mussolini's early life, again, he also was a very prominent socialist. And if you look at the Nazi Party platform and the Italian fascist platform, you're not going to see free market principles in there. All right, let's give some examples. One, they believe in the nationalization of industry, right? Another way to put this is the collectivization of industry or essentially the government takeover of industry. So when you look at aspects of the Nazi Party platform, they believe that everything from major, like critical industries should be owned by the state. They also believe that anything like a big box store should be owned by the state. Now, sometimes people claim that Hitler was actually a capitalist because he still allowed for some private ownership of the means of production. But if you actually look at what Hitler said, he essentially stated that provided that an industry or provided that a business was working in accordance with the national will, what was the national will? Whatever Hitler said the national will was, then he would allow them to operate. But the moment they didn't operate with under his rules, or the moment they weren't producing in accordance with what he thought they should be, he would take them over. So even if you were a quote-unquote private business, you were still operating under so many regulations, so many rules from the state, that it's really straining the word to call it private at that point. But the moment you stepped out of line, or the moment you weren't producing in accordance with what Hitler wanted to, they took you over. Right? That's not a free market principle. That's a collectivist principle. That's a principle that is far more in line with Marx, because what's communism? Communism is the abolition of the private ownership of the means of production. Okay, someone explain to me how nationalizing industry is a right-wing political ideology or a pro-capitalist ideology. It's exactly the opposite. You will not find free market advocates or capitalists arguing for the government takeover of industry. And it's interesting because sometimes communists will say, well, see, that's anti-communist because communists believe in the people owning the industry. Well, fascists would come back and say, wait a second, the people is the state are the people, so this is the people owning the industry. And funny enough, even when communists say, well, that's not true communism, okay, great. Well, in every country that has actually tried to carry out Marxist ideology, it's always been the government running stuff. So spare me this idea that it's just the people owning things, right? It's the government owning things. And that's the way they tried to do it as well.
So I think you'll really enjoy that. Nick Freitas is he's a great statesman, former Green Beret. He's a talented communicator. I think we'd be very lucky to have him basically in any role of public service, because he's one of the few that actually is serving the cause of liberty. The next and final podcast here is Jocko Willink. The Jocko Podcast by Jocko Willink. And I really enjoy this. I was thinking about this. How many hours have I listened to that? And I could go total it up, but it's more than 40. I know that. Came across this 6 months ago and have used it a lot on the road and the times when I've had to travel to Virginia Beach and Norfolk and Richmond and Northern Virginia and other places, because his podcasts are unusually long. You know, the rule of thumb is 30 to 60 minutes, abracadabra. That's it. And he just breaks all the rules. I just love it. His stuff is really good. He typically is going over a book or going over a leadership lesson. And that's really where I came across him, is trying to do better at learning about leadership, learning about being a better leader. And one of the books on my list is one he recommends called About Face. It's on my list. I'm on track, I think, there to get to that this year. I've got that, The Gulag Archipelago, and Live Not by Lies. So those are my three books for the year that I'm working on, as well as others here and there. But those are the three that are on the list for the goals. So take a listen to this.
3 days later, I was sitting ashore with orders assigning me to the 20th Air Ground Signal Liaison in Pusan, as far south as you could go. But I hadn't come to Korea to repair radios, and I wasn't about to sit out the war in Pusan. There were plenty of guys around who would be happy with those orders. They didn't need me. I went up to see the captain and explained that I was an infantry paratrooper and I expected to go to the 187th Airborne Regimental Combat Team or back to the 2nd Infantry Division. Both were in country. He scarcely heard me. He said what I'd been hearing ever since I had joined the Army. Impossible. I was humiliated and furious and stormed back to where my gear lay piled on the wet ground. I was surrounded by troops who had been wounded and who were now returning to their units. Artillery pounded to the north. I wasn't going south. The next day, when they loaded trucks aimed north, I picked one with 2nd Division on its bumper and leaped aboard. I was AWOL in Korea. You know what AWOL means, right? Absent without leave. So he's just got this cushy job repairing radios, and he randomly selects a vehicle and jumps on board. you think that's like, you go, okay, that's kind of crazy. Well, look, get this. The truck was a mixed bag of vets and replacements from a half a dozen different countries. A Korean was driving. I soon discovered that I was the only American aboard. I also learned from one of the Koreans who spoke English better than I did that the truck belonged not to the U.S. 2nd Infantry Division, but to the Republic of Korea Army 2nd Infantry Division. So I first saw combat in a Korean division, but at least I was in battle. And look, there's, I could easily just turn this into an audiobook and read the entire freaking thing. Like, there's so much interesting things that happen. You kind of have to read it yourself. And I apologize. I just don't want to do a full audiobook of this because I'm reading these things and I'll be like, well, I can't read the whole book. And then you read something crazy. Mm.
This could never happen nowadays, right?
No.
Obviously.
No.
Okay.
Like, I mean, I guess it kind of could. It kind of could, actually. It
under
kind
what of could. Circumstances?
Hey, man, you're in country. You know, you could get away with a lot. You could get away with a lot because they don't have, you know, you could kind of make things happen, right?
Yeah.
Just like, you know, you're sneaking into a concert. You kind of act like you know what you're doing and you kind of walk past the doorman like you're going to, you got some task that you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
No one says anything to you.
Yeah.
So, you know, you throw your name. Hey, can you put me on that manifest to get this flight up to Baghdad? You know, somebody be like, well, where are you from? I'm from a SEAL team that's supposed to be up there. You know, name's Willink. what happened? Oh, no, I was late. My kid was sick and I got here late. I'm just trying to get up with my unit. And they're like, they're just going to hook you up, right?
Right, yeah. That's surprising.
Remember when we were talking to Tilt?
Yeah.
It was either Tilt or it might have been Dick Thompson, who was like, if you volunteered to go to Vietnam, I was like, yeah, cool. Yeah, you're in. It wasn't like, hey, can I please go?
Yeah,
it was like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, you want to go to Nam? Cool. Yeah. Oh, you want to go to Special Forces? Cool. You want to go to SOG? Cool. No problem.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like a little bit of that.
Still, like nowadays,
I think you could get away with some of this.
Yeah.
It'd be a little bit trickier.
Yeah,
man, you got occasional strap hangers roll around country.
Doable though. Yeah, it's surprisingly influential when someone just sounds like and looks like they know what they're talking about.
Hey, man, you know what? You know how you know what someone's rank is? They have a little patch that's velcroed onto their thing. So
velcro,
yeah,
straight up.
Freaking Andy Stumpf talking about that. Yeah. Andy Stumpf would like make himself a lieutenant commander, and he'd make himself four ranks above what he actually was.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, and I guess, right? I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, if they chose to look into it, then it's like, yeah,
yes,
they could eventually find out. But if you're just, you know, raising no suspicion because you look like you know what you're talking about, like, you're not going to look into every little thing that happens
to
you, you know?
Yeah. So especially there's a war going on. You're like, oh, you're a replacement? Cool.
Yeah.
You're not like, let me see your paperwork.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you, oh, by the way, when they ask for your paperwork, you say, oh, yeah, you got blown up.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're trying to do something that a normal person would be thinking is advantageous for you. It's not like you're saying, hey, I need to get on a plane to go to Japan.
Right, right.
Then people are probably saying, hey, what do you mean? What do you need to go to Japan for?
Yeah.
What's he talking about?
Yeah.
That's not happening. But if you're saying, hey, I want to go to the front lines.
Yeah.
Hey. And you're going to see his whole tour, basically, he's AWOL. He's AWOL this whole tour. He does exactly what you said. He kind of shows up and gets with a company and starts working.
So he's, in a way, it's almost like a crazy irony where he's AWOL, but he's AWOL because he's not AWOL. You see what I'm saying? He's
Yes.
Yeah.
He's BWOL. Like, I'm going to get some. He's get some wall, whatever that is. Yeah. You could get, I think you could get away with some of it. I mean, I know that we definitely did some, let me give you an example. We did things that were not normal, you know, maybe not a fish. You know, not official maneuvers.
Yeah.
You know, my CBs, so I had CBs which is construction battalion. So they're Navy guys that do construction. And they've got a really awesome historical story in that they would build airfields in World War II. And they did, and there's part of the underwater demolition teams that use some of that experience from the CBs. So there's a connection there. Anyways, CBs are CBs, the CBs that worked for me, they did some stuff that was not above, that was not 100%, let's say, authorized,
yeah,
right? For instance, We need a piece of equipment. We need a piece of gear. We need a bunch of lumber to build something. Basically, my CBs would figure out how to get that stuff that we needed. Yeah. And, you know, they might be trading stakes or whatever, captured weapons, you know, whatever, just whatever random things. And here you go. Yep, make stuff work. So there's definitely, it's a little bit more, it's Wild West, right?
Yeah.
You ever heard, like, Iraq or Afghanistan described, oh, it was the Wild West out there?
Yeah, I hear people say that.
It takes a little while for the administrative things to catch up.
Right.
So when you're waiting for administrative things to catch up, there's some shady activities happening. You're making some things happen.
Who is the guy? And there's a movie about it. He was like a young kid, and he'd go, and he'd be a pilot, and he'd really, like, do stuff. Like, would be
I don't know the name of the movie, but I know what you're talking about, but I never watched it either. But yeah. Would he, like, get and fly a plane and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah, he would. Apparently, the story, I didn't see the movie either, but I remember seeing, it was an interview. He was on like a podcast,
the real
I
want to say.
Yeah, the real guy. And he's older or whatever, but he was saying like, yeah, his main thing would, you just act like you know what you're doing. Yeah, that's all you got to do.
That's always a good one.
And so he could be like this young kid, even though like straight up, like someone that young will never be a pilot. Like it just doesn't happen like that. And he'd just act like he knew what he was doing. And they'd be like, yeah, cool.
That's why they call it a con man, right? Because you have to have this confidence, this level of confidence. So he's got a level of confidence here just to jump on with a bunch of North Koreans. The reason that I went off on this tangent about not reading everything is because he jumps in. He's in combat with these guys. He says, the first guy I was sure that I had shot bounded into the air, then dropped over a ledge before us. It was my first sure kill, but I felt neither revulsion nor a sense of power, just indifference. I had had more compassion for rabbits and deer. A guy with a rifle in his hands coming to kill me did nothing to stir my sympathy. Subsequent years of combat in Korea and Vietnam served only to confirm and strengthen that feeling. 10 minutes later, I was out of ammunition. This is his first scenario. 10 minutes later, I'm out of ammunition. Everyone else on my side had already taken off, so I picked up a wounded Korean and helped him back to where I had joined the unit. Now look what happens. He finds a Jeep with four American GIs and just kind of rolls with them because he doesn't want to be – he's with Koreans. He's with people that aren't speaking. There's a few people that speak English, but most of them aren't. And then he jumps in with them, ends up going to this replacement depot, and he gets loaded onto a boxcar that's heading south. And then a couple days later, he ends up where he's supposed to be. Okay, so a couple days later, we were near enough for me to make my move. Oh, he gets to Pusan. So he gets back to Pusan because he's with the Korean unit. He doesn't want to be with the Korean unit. So he goes back to Pusan to figure out, like, okay, how can I get with some Americans? He gets back there. And a couple days later, we were near enough for me to make my move. I stole a Jeep and drove over to the 23rd. They were preparing to jump off for the Yalu River, a push north designed to end the war. Headed home was the motto. Home by Christmas, MacArthur promised. Rumor had it that the 7th Infantry Division and the Marines were already rolling north. The Rocks already have more men on the Yalu than the Chinese on the mainland. To put it together, someone swore, hell, it's as good as over. I felt a pang in my heart. But what the hell, a short war is better than none. Besides, life is full of surprises. So he steals a Jeep to go and, again, right? This guy's just getting after it. The temperature plummeted to 20 below. Again, I'm trying to figure out what to read, but you see that the temperature's 20 below. Let's make sure everybody knows. Extra equipment and ammunition were issued. We began to feel a fever for conquest. We were going to end it. The big attack was on. Not by us, but by the Chinese. 1 million strong, they came at us across the Yalu River out of Manchuria, surrounded by more than 30 full divisions. Our attack turned into a rout. So then this happens. So they're starting to kind of get beat up, and a sergeant comes off and says, we got to get more troops up here. The Turks are somewhere off close to the east. Do you know where they are? Sarge, I don't even know where we are. He ignored it. Well, I know where they're supposed to be, but I'd hope maybe you know for sure. He dropped a finger on my shoulder. I've got to send you after them. I don't have anyone to spare. It's another lesson of war. If you don't belong to the unit, you can be spared. So he's just tagging along with these guys. And so the sergeant's like, okay, well, I need somebody to go do something. It's you. Mm-hmm. Sure, I'll go. I heard myself volunteer. That was all. He didn't know any more about the Turks than I did. If I found them, okay. If I didn't, that was okay too. 2 hours later, I located their lead element. They were still heading north, looking for more Chinese, which said just about all there is to say about them. Every other unit was heading south, running from the Chinese, while the Turks were moving north, looking for Chinese. And the Chinese were desperately trying to avoid them. I couldn't talk to the Turks, and they couldn't talk to me. I tried to get across what I wanted, but it was useless. They had their orders. Attack north. Night closed in and I stayed. So he's supposed to go figure out what they're doing, and he can't even communicate with them to get them to do what he needed them to do. So he stays with them for a while. Then he decides, and fast forward, he decides he's got to leave and go back and at least tell them, hey, this is where the Turks are. I don't speak their language, and what do you want me to do next? And in order to leave, he heads off to the north. He thinks it's going to be the best way to go. And here we go back to the book. I looked ahead and spotted about 200 Chinese coming across the valley, not more than 100 yards out. I dropped down behind some rocks and fallen timbers and stretched out on my belly in the snow, recalling the dead captain. That's what I opened up with. I eased my rifle off safe. I wasn't about to be taken alive. They came straight up the finger toward me and passed. I was safe. I was ready to move again. I put my hands down to push myself up when all hell broke loose. The Turks had opened up with everything they had, and Chinese swarmed back down the hill toward me. I was halfway to my feet. It was too late to drop back down, and I couldn't just stand there. I spun the rifle around and opened up on three or four nearest to me. Weapons flew in the air, and bodies went sailing past me, ass over heels. I snatched up one of their burps and squeezed the trigger. A long, sharp rip rent the air, and more bodies tumbled by. As fast as I emptied one weapon, I scooped up another. I had them by the balls. I could fire at anything in any direction. They couldn't fire without hitting their own troops. Running and milling around in confusion, some headed back up the hill, and the Turks opened up again. When they came back down, I dropped another couple dozen. Suddenly, it fell silent. It was no time for me to move. I got back down and waited. At first light, the Turks sent a patrol to see what the score was. Between us, we had accounted for almost 200. My foxhole buddy convinced them that I had gone out after the entire group alone, and I became an arkadush, their brother. Later, when I stood before their president, the only foreign soldier ever to receive the Turkish equivalent of the Congressional Medal of Honor.
So this one is a really fun one. I had a good time listening to this. A lot of laugh out loud as I was driving down the road, where he goes over this guy's life as a soldier and how he just goes AWOL, but in a good way. He goes AWOL to run to the fight. He goes to the fight. Where's the fight at? Oh, the front's over there. Well, we're sending you the opposite direction. He goes, I don't think so. And he just gets on a truck and goes to the fight and does it again and again and again and again. So I love that. But this style that Jocko has with going over these things and talking about things, he's a really good communicator. And you know, he does these in one take. That's just, I marvel at that. But he does this in one take. It's also got a YouTube channel, which I've never, ever looked at. But those three are in the show notes, radiofreevirginia.com. I think you'll really enjoy all of those. Well, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you for listening. And please tell your friends. Tell your friends about this podcast. Share this on whatever social media platform, text message, Signal. Tell your friends, hey, I found this great podcast that you should listen to. Help us get the word out in the fight for the life of our nation, existence of America. You know, most of us just want to be left alone. I know that's me. I don't want to be left alone. They don't want me to be left alone. I'm determined to be left alone. One way or another, you're going to leave me alone. Remember, you were not made to fit in. You were born to stand out. I'm Hank Reardon. This is Radio Free Virginia. God bless you.